And in this next segment, we're going to spend some time talking with a guest from the Pacific Legal Foundation. His name is Tony Francois. And the topic for discussion here is from your group, Tony, the idea that environmental regulations are hard to follow. I think you'd probably get a lot of agreement on that topic from just about anybody connected to it. Thanks for coming on the show. And why is this an important topic for your organization?
Well, one of the principles that we think is important for all Americans at Pacific Legal Foundation is the ability to know what your legal obligations are in a clear way so that you can comply with them and to avoid, some of the pitfalls and traps for the unwary that complicated and ambiguous or vague legal requirements can create. Many of our clients who are enmeshed in federal environmental enforcement actions had no idea going in that some of these laws even applied to their ordinary daily activities like farming or fire protection, things like this. Mm-hmm. So what we find is that Congress passes Congress passed several very important environmental laws in the early 70s, things like the Clean Water Act, the Endangered Species Act, the Clean Air Act. And these laws, they've been updated a little bit over those years, but the basic requirements in those laws really hasn't changed much in 40-plus years. However, every new presidential administration that takes office almost immediately sets about to either undo the regulations that the other party had established during its administration or to revise them in other ways. And a lot of people face this constant back and forth between the political parties over how the executive agencies enforce these laws. And so as the White House goes back and forth from one party to the other, what the rules are can change radically. And at this point, for example, with the Clean Water Act, between the past administration and this one, the situation with what you need to do to comply with the Clean Water Act is so confusing that you need a map that shows you if you live in this state, you're subject to this court ruling that says you comply with those rules. And if you live in California or one of the other states, then you're under a different set of rules because a different court has ruled on them. And this is just a mess, and it's very difficult for people to know clearly in advance what the law requires of them.
And you've written an opinion piece that ran in The Hill in regard to this particular topic. The focus, if I'm correct on this, is that there needs to be some stability. And to get away from what you described as how each incoming administration pushes us swinging from left to right, back and forth on what they're going to enforce, what the priorities are, what they're going to eliminate as regulation, what they're going to add as regulation. How do you get to that stability?
Well, I think there are two basic things that need to happen, and these are things that were designed into our structure of government from the beginning with what most people would recognize from their civics class as the separation of powers. And under that, Congress, which is who we elect directly, and especially the House of Representatives, we represent them frequently, they are responsible to actually make the rules, the laws that we have to comply with. The executive branch is supposed to execute those laws, enforce them, and bring enforcement actions as necessary. And then the judiciary is supposed to independently referee those enforcement actions. And what Congress has developed the habit of doing, though, is instead of actually making the rules that we have to live by, and then being accountable for deciding what the rules are, they pass the buck to an ever-growing host of executive bureaucracies by adopting a law, by adopting laws that call for vague and fuzzy and always good sounding aspirational goals. We will have clean water. We will protect endangered species, and this is true in many other areas. We'll have cheap, affordable, reliable healthcare. But rather than saying how this works, they then deputize civil service bureaucrats in the agencies to make the actual rules that everybody will have to live under. Those agencies are what the White House has general control over. And so this practice of outsourcing the hard policy decisions to executive agencies results in this constant political back and forth as one party and then the other has control of the agencies and their rulemaking. The final problem with this, and the second part of the solution, is that historically, our courts, the federal courts, one of their roles was to clearly interpret what the law's requirements are. And this is important because if you have, for example, the police enforcing the law, we want a check and balance. We want some independent person interpreting what the law requires so that the government can't just enforce against people on their own say-so. But in the last several decades, the federal courts have, unfortunately, but rather broadly, deferred to cabinet officers and other agencies in their interpretation of the law. What this basically means is that whatever party the president is from, and whether that's your party or the other guy's party, our current situation is that Congress lets the president decide what the laws are going to be, and then the courts let the president tell them what the laws are instead of telling the president what the laws are. And so Congress needs to retake its role of deciding what the rules are instead of outsourcing that. And the courts need to independently interpret and apply the law rather than allowing executive branch agencies to tell them what the law is.
This seems to echo through a lot of policy areas, not just environmental regulation, but this idea of first thing I do when I get elected is to undo everything my predecessor did. That doesn't really seem like the healthiest of systems, does it?
No, I don't think it is. And, whichever side of, for example, environmental regulation, where you think the balance should be struck between protecting natural resources on the one hand and using them for economic development and people's livelihoods, the more uncertain that is, the more unstable that is, the worse that is both for development and use of natural resources and for conservation of them, because we never actually develop a consistent way of doing things. That prevents, on the side of protecting environmental resources, the kind of certainty that would allow, for example, a landowner to know, all right, this is what's going to be required of me to protect these resources. I can build that into my plans. I can finance whatever I need to do. And it becomes part of our mindset, our ethic. This is how we protect the environment. When that is constantly changing, the environment suffers from that. Mm-hmm.
And it would seem that there's two different areas of cost beyond the metaphorical cost to the environment itself, but the actual financial impact. You have, first of all, the private sector trying to respond to changing environmental regulations, and one variation can ripple through somebody's planning process to where drawings have to be redone, new surveys, new studies have to be completed, and before you know it, you've incurred a huge cost for an unexpected change. And then you have the cost of sort of wasted productivity on the government side, people redoing something they've just done or undoing something they've just done. Are we wasting a lot of money on both sides of that spectrum?
Well, I think we are, and I think in addition to that, we're wasting momentum both for kind of responsible development of natural resources and their protection. one of the things that happens, for example, on the development side, is that you start getting this mindset or this view that, okay, now our person is in the White House and our person is setting the tone and the direction of federal regulation. We gotta quickly take advantage of this. We gotta accelerate our plans. We've gotta do more than we otherwise would have to take advantage of this window where our people are in charge. I don't know if our people is the right way of putting it, but I think a lot of people view it that way, mm-hmm. that our people are in charge of the government. This is our chance to do what we need to do. And then the same thing happens on the environmental side. Conservationists and other groups look at administrations that they favor as their opportunity to either gain lost ground or to, you know, get something locked in that they're afraid a subsequent administration would undo. Mm-hmm. All this back and forth. You're right, the money, the consulting, the planning gets wasted and becomes more expensive. But it stokes conflict as well. And over things that we ought to be able to find common ground on and just become part of the way we do things.
Yeah. You point out in the piece you wrote that this undoing of the predecessor isn't just an occurrence in the Trump administration, but you can track it back at least four administrations of trying to reverse what the previous administration did on not just environmental policy, but since we're focused on that. So that's been going on for quite some time. Did it have a beginning point? Was there a time prior to what's happening now that when this wasn't occurring, and what was different about that time, if there was that moment?
Well, that is a great question. I love that question because a lot of the federal environmental statutes were passed in the late 60s, but mainly the early 70s. Mm-hmm. And in the 1970s, as some of the unexpected results of these laws became clear through court cases and just on the ground implementation, Congress actually, in the 70s, amended a couple of these statutes in important ways to correct what they viewed as unintended consequences of the law. I like to say, you know, Congress used to have rare lucid moments where they came together in a bipartisan way and said, no, wait a second, this isn't what we meant. Let's fix this. They did that with the Endangered Species Act and the way critical habitat is designated. They did that with the Clean Water Act in the mid-70s over how it impacts farming and ranching and some other activities. Since then, so I think you have to say, you know, since the 80s, Congress has become less and less willing to make the hard decisions about what it wants the law to be. And that has ushered in this era of each successive presidential administration, you know, trying to change the law to suit its electoral constituency through regulations. Mm-hmm.
And so it's the lack of courage or the lack of bipartisanship in Congress that is the root of the problem?
Well, yeah, and in a certain way, kind of a counterintuitive way, it's the lack of ambition. Hmm. You know, when the Constitution was designed, the thought was that the checks and balances, the separation of lawmaking or rulemaking, and putting that in the hands of Congress, and in a separate branch, the executive branch, having enforcement, that these two would be in conflict and competition with each other, and that Congress would be jealous of its authority to decide what the rules are. But maybe it has to do with kind of the way publicity and television works in the modern era, but members of Congress of both parties have discovered that it's a lot safer for them, in relation to their voters, for them to pass these vague, you know, nice-sounding, you know, who would be against clean water and clean air, right? And then outsource the hard decisions to bureaucrats whom they can then call back to Capitol Hill to hearings and pound the table and say, you know, what kind of crazy thing are you doing? You're either destroying business or you're destroying the environment, depending on, you know, which political perspective you come from. So they get to tell their voters, hey, I voted for this, you know, nice sounding law that just says go forth and do good things. And then I criticize this bureaucrat over here who did things that you don't like with that law. They're completely evading their responsibility as the elected branch to make the laws, to make the laws. And they figured out how to take advantage of passing the buck.
It's interesting to ponder and remember that those landmark environmental laws you talked about, the Clean Water Act and so forth, there was a period of time when those laws were coming into being in very bipartisan ways, and I think about half of it under Democratic administrations and about half under Republican administrations. Isn't that about right?
Well, that's certainly true, and I think that the you know, the bipartisan consensus around environmental protection in the late 60s and early 70s, and really, I mean, I would say in a lot of members of Congress, that continued into the 80s and the early 90s. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's changed that is that while there are still, you know, important things to continue doing in the core areas of these laws, a lot of the agencies have moved past their original top priorities into things that become more controversial if you're asking, is this what the federal government should be doing? So the use of the Clean Water Act to micromanage farming, okay? Mm-hmm. That's something that the Army Corps of Engineers is becoming more and more involved in, and there's a lot more disagreement on a partisan basis over whether that's what the Clean Water Act actually authorizes them to do. So some of it has to do with the change in the ways these laws are enforced. But certainly the degree to which it's dangerous to a politician to be caught collaborating with the enemy, if you will, plays a role in that.
Mm. Doesn't seem sustainable. One of many examples of how the hyper-partisanship doesn't work to our common interest. We've been talking here with Tony Francois from the Pacific Legal Foundation on why environmental regulations are so hard, maybe impossible to follow for so many people. You can read more about this by looking up the Pacific Legal Foundation. Where will we find info on your organization?
On the internet at pacificlegal.org.
That's pretty simple and straightforward. Tony, thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much.
Have a good one. All right. And so that wraps up that segment of the show for today.